into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on, bit crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, welcome to your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. I'm Justin Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus. I'm also the author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were doing, what the 1941 Phillies were up to while Joe DiMaggio was making history. Available now. With me is Liz Rocher, the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin. And I'll also mention I'm the editor of The National Pastime, which is our location-based journal that we put out for every Sabre convention. Sabre convention is coming up the end of July, July 29th through August 2nd. It is in Cleveland this year, so if you have any interest at all in Cleveland baseball, it would be an awesome thing to do. If you're interested in just reading the journal, please hit me up on Blue Sky at Liz Rocher, and I'll be able to help you get one to you, because it's a great journal with lots of really interesting stuff in it.
Later, we'll be talking to Leo Morgenstern of MLB Trade Rumors about the Phillies' outlook at the MLB trade deadline, moves they could make, moves they should make, and what this team is going to look like after the August 3rd deadline. But first, Liz, we must discuss that Bryce Harper will be participating in the Major League Baseball Home Run Derby at Citizens Bank Park on July 13th. Yay! Cool story about the Phillies' superstar. Now here's an uncool one.
That's it.
One.
Now we're done. let's move right on. This was great news. We don't have to think about anything else, right?
Unfortunately. Bryce Harper, the news that he would be participating in the Home Run Derby, very cool. Something that I had been saying, multiple people have been saying, it'd be great to see him, even if he can't be in the All-Star game or whatever he is. He's the Commissioner's Legends pick for the All-Star game. But to have him compete in the Home Run Derby is also cool. Just to have some Phillies player who can hit home runs participating in the Home Run Derby while it's in Philadelphia. Very cool. This was announced, unfortunately, after a Philadelphia Inquirer story came out. Philadelphia Inquirer reporters David Gambacorta and William Bender are covering the growth of gambling addiction among teens and adults across Pennsylvania. This is an ongoing project. And a recent article from that project was published yesterday about an Eagles fan named Terry Thompson, who the story notes, quote, entered a psychiatric facility to undergo treatment for gambling addiction. Thompson wagered $18.5 million through FanDuel, which the sports wagering app, which obviously delighted FanDuel, and they awarded him all kinds of lavish gifts and game tickets as his debts piled up. And this segment I'm going to read is quoting directly from Gambacorta's story. By late November 2024, Thompson had incurred steep losses and resorted to desperate measures to fund his addiction. Then, one afternoon, he flicked open his phone and received a FanDuel reward that momentarily distracted him from his debts, a personalized video message from Philadelphia Phillies superstar Bryce Harper. The Inquirer has the 21-second video. They talked about what was in it. He addresses Thompson by name. He mentions Thompson's young son. He thanks Thompson for his support. He mentions his FanDuel rep. So he says FanDuel, so he knows it's for FanDuel. As the article also notes, Harper is not wearing any FanDuel merchandise, but the video is marked with the company's logo. He mentions Thompson's VIP manager. And he wished him an extra special Thanksgiving. So initially, you kind of hear the broad strokes of this story. I was like, yeah, I mean, he probably records a lot of videos like that, fires them off, doesn't think about them. But then, it is clear that he knew kind of the context, or at least partial context of what he was recording. And, I heard somebody describe Harper as having, what do they say, negative situational awareness to do something like this, where you're talking about a guy who is really, in it, spiraling as far as his gambling addiction goes. And I encourage everyone to read the story at PhiladelphiaInquirer.com because it's quite harrowing and involved and detailed. It's good reporting. And Harper's involvement it makes you, oof, boy, you don't want to be involved in something like this, in a story like this. You just don't want to be involved directly, certainly, or indirectly. And Harper is now, unfortunately, kind of the face of it moving forward.
Yeah, he's the poster child for this particular problem. And I'm reading the article. The fact that what is it, the agent who represents Patrick Mahomes called this bad for sports and not good for your brand is pretty bad, I would say. Not looking good.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, and this is just a guess, I can't imagine there's going to be a huge fallout from this. This feels like the kind of thing that just sort of, they hope gets forgotten. You know, maybe he does it less or not at all moving forward. I don't know. But given that Scott Boras was reached for comment for this article, well, they attempted to reach him for comment and he had nothing to say, I feel like there might be a veil of silence just kind of thrown over this issue, because there's a couple of reasons why it might be sensitive. And yeah, I think they just they don't want to deal with it. I just think, yeah, like I said, personally, I just think it's a shame that Harper is involved in this and sports wagering. Yeah. I mean, I know it's a obviously very lucrative industry for the people behind it, but and I know lots of people have gotten more involved in sports betting because of apps like FanDuel and the other one, DraftKings, and you know, apps like that. I know it's very popular. It's never really interested me. I've never been much of a gambler, so I've never really gotten close to that, but I know the damage it can do, and this story really relates the damage that gambling addiction, which these apps are so good at fostering, what it can do to your personal life and certainly to your finances. And boy, it's just not a good look to be involved in my opinion in any way. No. So oof, I always say I pay enough of an emotional toll watching sports. If I had to pay a financial toll, I can't imagine the demoralizing nature of watching sports. I mean,
one thing I want to mention is that there's no mention of how much Bryce Harper might have gotten paid for this, because he didn't do it for free. He doesn't have a deal with FanDuel, and unless he's like personal friend, I don't even think a personal friend would get a free deal on a detailed video like that. It wasn't long, but there was intent to it, and I think he clearly had a script or practiced it. Like, he didn't do this for free. So how much did he get paid? And then you have to consider that against how much did FanDuel pay for this for one of their VIP clients? Like, if they paid a couple $100,000 or even just like 50 or whatever, I guess that's, I mean, they have to consider this client a massive whale, a massive piggy bank for them. It's just disgusting. When I worked at Yahoo Sports, I had to cover a lot of stories like this, and in every case it involved the VIP manager of the gambling addict using that type of thing, like, you know, incredible season tickets, a fan experience with a retired player, that type of thing, against these guys to make them continue to do this. It's awful and gross and very dirty. It's very bad, and I hate it. I wish it was not in sports so bad. Not just because of stories like this, but because of the hundreds and hundreds and thousands of stories we don't hear, because they're not as extreme as this, but they're still terrible.
Like, why do they have the guy's young son's name to reference? Like,
that's
all kinds of...
It's screwed up, man. That's what they do. It's all about mining that personal connection and trying to get, I mean, it's all about the dopamine hit, really. If you can give this guy a bigger dopamine hit when he wins or when he does well, this is what he gets, and he's going to keep trying to find that. That's at least what this type of addiction is all about. And I think a lot of addictions are about that as well.
Well, moving on, we do have some baseball to discuss, fortunately.
Thank God. That was depressing.
And it's not all bad, really. I don't know about you, Liz. I feel like some people were starting to see the Phillies split a series in Pittsburgh, lose a series with the Royals, and then coming into last night's third game against the Reds, having lost pretty resoundingly in game two, and the potential of losing a series to Cincinnati, a team you really shouldn't lose a series to, was on the table last night. Started to feel, I've heard some people referencing the past collapses or spirals of the Phillies. Perhaps you've heard of the time they lost to the A's. I believe that was 2024. and it kind of started this cascade downward that didn't end until they were eliminated from the playoffs. I don't know, were you feeling any sort of negativity coming into like this, like having to win, stock up a bunch of wins before the All-Star break, kind of go into the All-Star break with some momentum rather than the kind of more stumbling the Phillies have been doing lately with some of their flaws pretty on display?
I wasn't feeling too great, I'll admit. I mean, and I always hate the lead in, lead out from the All-Star game because it's given some outsized importance. Like, this is how you do before this, you know, before we stop baseball for a few days so we can celebrate it. You know, and this is how they're doing afterwards. It's like there's this little break. I just, it makes a lot of sense, but it's just like I hate going into the All-Star break and feeling like they have to build up wins and then coming out of it and feeling like, God, they have to get a hot starter. If they don't, it's going to be difficult for like another month before they snap out of it. At least that's how it's been in the past. So I wasn't going in with a great feeling. And I don't know if I was terribly comforted after game one.
Yeah.
Were you?
I mean, it was, look, this team's flaws have been on display in every time they lose a game. You know, you can point to one of the things that's been an issue for a little while now. We are all aware of the holes in this team. And in game two, after that 4-1 win in game one, in game two, the Phillies got pretty well flattened. And it comes down to the flaw of needing more lefty relievers, which is kind of a newer version. Like heading up to the trade deadline, which again, we're going to talk to Leo Morgenstern about in a couple minutes. There's a pretty clear list, you know, outfield, right-handed bat. That's probably going to be the same person, or preferably would be the same person. You need some rotation help. You need some bullpen help. In any of these cases, getting more than one guy would also be helpful. And now you're talking about issues like, well, we talked about Trey Turner's defense at short in our last episode of Hidden Season. And, you know, maybe that's an issue you want to address. But then also lefty relievers, now an issue as well. You can't rely on a furious Zach Wheeler to blast through the opposing lineup like they're wet paper every night. Sometimes you got to go to the pen. And if game two against the Reds on Wednesday was any indication, the Phillies don't have a deep pen, I guess you could say, to rely on. Throughout the season, there's been different relievers I've considered. Okay, those are the guys I'm comfortable with. But that has been a changing cast, very fluid throughout the season, except for Joan Duran. He's obviously the one standout. Tanner Banks, the lefty, came into the game on Wednesday. He allowed four runs, including back-to-back-to-back home runs, and got only one out in his appearance. Jose Alvarado also allowed four runs in that game. They allowed four home runs in one inning, and both Alvarado and Banks have ERAs over seven at this point. And those are two lefties that you want to be able to rely on out of your bullpen. The Reds, as you might have guessed, are not one of the highest flying offenses in the league, so this is not a great sign that they were so easily, that the Reds so easily beat up on the two Phillies lefties. Cole Weintraub of NBC Sports Philly writes that the club's lefties have allowed the highest opponent's OPS at 831. Kyle Backus, also left-handed, also not been good. And then you have Tim Mizea, who's probably your best southpaw right now, and honestly, he's like number three in the Phillies reliever power rankings behind Joan Duran, and at this point, Jonathan Bolin is your other reliable arm out there. Another new arrival to more, you know, he's been like kind of a new arrival as far as like being trustworthy, and Orion Kerkering, he's faltered. Brad Keller, he's back from being hurt and being bad before he was hurt. So, you know, who exactly do you turn to in these situations? It's been an endless shuffle of an unideal bullpen. Banks is now on the injured list with a forearm strain, which was apparently bothering him before he came into the game on Wednesday. Go figure. He was the ninth Phillies reliever to hit the injured list this season, counting Kerkering, who entered the season on the injured list. And now the recently demoted Chase Shugart is back to replace him, which is an indication of how little depth this team has. They just demoted that guy for not getting the job done. Now they got to bring him back because somebody's got a forearm issue. So, Liz, as we approach the trade deadline, I mean, it's going to feel like the most driving need is the one that most recently lost the Phillies a ball game. So right now it feels like the bullpen and specifically lefty relievers is where this team really needs to focus with the deadline approaching. But, you know, Last night, they did manage to win the game 1-0, but obviously the offense wasn't having a great night. So maybe now that outfield bat and more right-handed hitters is where you want to focus as the trade deadline approaches. Where do you find yourself with the Phillies' flaws so on display whenever they lose a game?
We're talking about the lefties again, the lack of lefties.
Well, I mean, which flaw do you feel like is the most driving need for the Phillies right now? Because like I said, it can feel like based on which game you saw last, that's the problem they need to address first.
I mean, this might not be on topic, but I'm getting a little antsy when I start to see Johan Duran on the mound. Not that he's not good, but he keeps letting runners on and it bothers me. And it does depend on which inning you're watching after the starter leaves. Like last night, thankfully, there wasn't a lot of room needed on Thursday night. You know, they didn't need to fill up too many innings, but they have to fill up a lot of innings a few times a week. And so, like, it's someone is walking another person or someone can't find the freaking strike zone. My God, Orion Kerkering. Like, I did not expect that from him earlier this week when he just, like, walked the bases loaded. That was, like, awful. I hated it. And watching it made me so nervous because these are the little things you hate to see because they could turn into such big things down the road. And the Phillies just seem to have a bad habit of picking guys that they think won't walk dudes, and they just do.
Well, hopefully they can. There's definitely going to be some movements, I think. Alex McFarlane down in the minors, you could reach for him, but he's a double A. He's a name people have started talking about. You know, I don't think he's an answer, but he could be part of an attempted answer for sure. And then obviously, you know, you look at the trade market. The word is so many big name relievers got moved around last year that you're not actually going to see too many of them get moved around this year because they've all got less movable deals. Though, you know, you can also find anonymous executives saying, oh, Mason Miller maybe is available because no one ever knows what AJ Preller is going to do in San Diego. And you're like, all right, well, again, that's talking about higher profile names than the Phillies are predicted to be able to be playing for anyway because of they don't have a lot of players they want to trade or that they can trade. They got money to spend, but you know, that's not necessarily going to solve all your problems at the trade deadline. So I remain curious how this is going to go, because like I said, depending on the night you're watching the Phillies, you could consider one thing a priority for the deadline, and next night could be something else. And like I said last night,
in a way, they have tons of choices to solve their problems if you want to look at it that way.
To look at it another way, last night, while the offense may not have been very present, the Phillies had five hits. Brandon Marsh had two. But Jesus Luzardo pitched seven innings of shutout ball. He allowed two hits, two walks, 11 strikeouts. He pitched a career high in strikeouts not too long ago with 13. So he was knocking on that door again. Lizardo's going to strike batters out, whether he's pitching the night of his, like, the game of his life or not. His strikeout total is second on the Phillies behind only Christopher Sanchez, and they're the only two guys who had triple digits in that vein. Zach Wheeler would be among them as well if he hadn't started the season on the injured list. But still, Jesus Luzardo, also an all-star at this point. I'm not sure if he's really had an all-star season. I think there was sort of a slot open for a Phillies pitcher, and that pitcher was Zach Wheeler. But because of the schedule, he is not going to be pitching in the all-star game or on the all-star team as of now. And he was mad about that, Liz. He was madder about that than I thought he was going to be. Much, much madder about that. And I mean, I like that. I like to see that. Was that something that in game one of this Red Series, you enjoyed seeing an angry Zach Wheeler?
I did. He doesn't seem to get angry a lot. And so seeing that side of him was great. You know, like, you know, he's a passionate guy, but he's real soft spoken. And seeing him get, like, angry and vengeful and just sort of express that type of dissatisfaction with something he can't control. That's sort of the problem. Pitchers are control freaks, all of them. They pitch because they seek to control their own movements and influence the rest of the game. That's what pitchers do. And not being able to control something like this definitely digs at a pitcher, especially if he feels that he deserves it. And it's not just him feeling he deserves it. A lot of people not just feel he deserves it. It's obvious. It's just straight up obvious. But this happens every All-Star game. Someone is left on the outside looking in, you know, and I don't know if people are, it's the time that he missed, but like, I don't see anybody talking about, oh, he missed this time. It's, you know, it's definitely set him back. Like, no, he didn't miss a stitch. You know, he took the time off. It was just like an extended vacation. Like, really, that's all it was, because he came back and it was like he wasn't injured at all.
On the one hand, I want the Phillies to get the honors they deserve, and Zach Wheeler should be in the All-Star game. On the other, boy, it sure does seem like this team is never better than when they are mad, and they worse than when they are complacent. So this team getting motivated by scorn and spite,
I love it.
I think, yeah, hey, if that's going to make you pitch like Zach Wheeler or hit like Bryce Harper can, that's something to consider. So get mad, stay mad, Zach Wheeler.
It's been a long time since I think we've had a team in Philly that thrives on spite and slights like this, and I want them to take full advantage of this. Like, I hate that, you know, the bulletin board material type thing, and I know players hate it too, but it's what this is, and they have to embrace it, because it's the only way they're going to make it to the end of the season without, like, sputtering.
You hate it when it's forced, when it's totally organic, yes, like in this case. It completely works. The Orlando Arcia thing, totally
just
organic.
Just thinking that.
Completely worked for Bryce Harper, but you can't force it. You can't be a manager who's like, this guy in the Omaha newspaper made a vague insult about you, and put it on the bulletin board and be like, that's going to drive the... No, that's obviously not going to
work. That worked in 1940, maybe. Not now.
But like I said, in Game 3 last night, the Phillies did manage to pull off a win despite having very little offense, thanks in large part to Jesus Luzardo, an All-Star. I'm not unhappy to see him be in the All-Star game, but statistically, it's a little surprising to see Jesus Luzardo named to the All-Star game, giving the Phillies a sixth All-Star and then the most All-Star representatives in the All-Star game, which is, you know, I don't mind that either. Very cool. Jonathan Bolin and Joan Duran took you the rest of the way in Game 3, both of them combining to throw two scoreless innings. Duran got the save. He did allow a hit. He had two strikeouts. Bolin had one as well. As far as the offense that won them the game, well, was not the normal guys. This is the rally that won the Phillies the game in the top of the eighth in Cincinnati. Gabriel Encones Jr. led off. He was hit by a pitch. They pinch ran for him with Derek Hill, and he got to second on JT Realmuto's groundout. So, you know, you're two batters and a pinch runner and an out into the inning to get a guy at second base. And then finally, thankfully, it was Justin Crawford who got a ground ball under a glove at second base and snuck into the outfield for an RBI single that allowed Hill to score. And then that inning ended with both Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper striking out. So the offense was not on point, but it was just enough to rely on the sparkling performance of Jesus Luzardo. Justin Crawford gets the RBI that wins you that game, and Duran really got to earn his paycheck closing out. I mean, that's why you got Duran. That's why you got the high-end closer, even in a struggling pen, to come in there and close out a 1-0 game just to ensure that, you know, we don't have to make this interesting or go deeper into a bullpen that right now does not really reward you for having to lean on it too hard. But thankfully, the Phillies were able to win the series in Cincinnati, and now they move on to Detroit for 3 games to finish out the first half. Tonight, Liz, there will be an Aaron Nola start at Comerica Park at 6:40 facing Jack Flaherty. The Saturday game will be at 6:10. That'll be Christopher Sanchez versus Casey Mize. Casey Mize, that's a name you've seen people interested in the Phillies acquiring pitching bring up, so that might be a game to watch as far as who the Phillies could be targeting at the trade deadline. And then Sunday, you get the start that ruined Zach Wheeler's July. Zach Wheeler will be starting against Tarek Skubal, a potentially, you know, another blockbuster matchup. We got Wheeler and Skeens, now we get Wheeler and Skubal, though the Wheeler-Skeens game didn't really turn out to be a pitcher's duel the way people thought.
Yeah.
Could be an excellent game to watch if you're a fan of great pitching, but again, it is the game that prevents Zach Wheeler from pitching in the All-Star game, which he is very mad about. And he's right when he says, I can pitch one inning. We're not talking about me making a making a full start here. We're talking about me pitching one inning of an exhibition game, essentially. Like, I can, you know, I can do that. And, you know, he's mostly right. But, Liz, you feel like these three games in Detroit are going to be just what the doctor ordered for this team to kind of beat up on a team that has not had a great year and head into the All-Star break feeling good about themselves?
Absolutely. Let's beat up on the week and use it to our advantage.
Well, the Phillies haven't had great success against better teams like the Brewers and Dodgers and Braves and Cubs this year, but they have been able to beat up on the weaker teams. And hey, it's all the same to me when the win column fills with wins. So why not beat up on the Tigers while you can? Hopefully they can do that. Get some stellar pitching out of Sanchez and Wheeler and maybe see the return of some offense that they weren't able to get in Game 3 in Cincinnati. But for the most part, I think we can feel good about the Phillies. We'll see what happens in these last three games. I'm looking forward to the second half, but mostly I'm looking forward to the All-Star game and the break as well. A lot of fun stuff happening in Philadelphia. Get out to some of those events, and I'll mention here that if you're in town for the Home Run Derby, I will be at Evil Genius on the brewery in Fishtown on July 13th, starting at 6 p.m. As part of the No Bad Hops live podcast and Home Run Derby watch party. So come on down. We're going to be talking about Summer of the Cheap Wieners. We're going to be talking about Phillies and baseball. They're doing a raffle for to sponsor youth baseball. So a lot of good stuff happening at Evil Genius on July 13th, starting at 6 p.m. Hopefully I'll see you there. For those already looking past the pageantry of the All-Star Game in Philadelphia, there is, of course, the trade deadline. It is on August 3rd this year, and so now is the time when teams scramble to fix what's wrong with them. And for some teams, there's more wrong than right. The Phillies are coming in with a clear list of needs, but questions will obviously remain. What should they do? How will they do it? And when the sun rises on August 4th, how completely fixed will these Philadelphia Phillies be? I'm joined now by Leo Morgenstern, formerly of The Good Fight, currently of MLBTradeRumors.com, who just recently wrote a trade deadline outlook for the Philadelphia Phillies. You can find that at MLBTradeRumors.com. Leo, thanks for joining us here on Hittin' Season.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to talking about the Phillies.
Now, you said, unsurprisingly, like I think everyone's really aware at this point, what the Phillies' general needs are. You can kind of see that on display on a nightly basis. That's not like they're losing a ton of games, but when they do lose or things go wrong, you can typically point out the issues, and you do that in the article. You say that the Phillies could use an outfielder, right-handed bats, preferably more than one, a back-end starter, preferably more than one, bullpen depth, preferably more than one. Seeing a pattern here. Do you expect them to address each of these issues, or are there cases that are more likely to just be addressed by, well, we'll just hope for the best with what we have, or we made some minimal adjustments and maybe that'll be enough? Because what I just listed is potentially a lot of changes.
Yeah, well, I think the conclusion I came to is I would be surprised if they don't do something in each of those areas. I would be very surprised if there isn't some sort of outfield addition, some sort of right-handed bat, a bit of pitching for the rotation and bullpen. But yeah, there isn't necessarily a perfect option anywhere. And so they might end up having to sort of put more of their limited resources towards fixing one of those needs and sort of piece together something for the others.
Of all the teams that are out there looking for the changes that are going to put them over the top, how limited are the Phillies' resources at the trade deadline? Like, we all have a general idea of they've really never had more than a mid-range ranked farm system since I've been alive, honestly. But this year is no different. We're all pretty aware of the top of that farm system was supposed to play a large role in the big league club this year. After that, there's a few other guys, but for the most part, they are not considered a very rich farm system. And as far as their tradable assets on the major league level, well, I feel like we're familiar with that list as well, but there's some merit to not trading those guys as well. So where do the Phillies rank among teams that have the ability to trade at this deadline?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely in a position where if they're getting into a bidding war with almost any other team, they maybe don't have the prospects to win that bidding war.
Ah, that's what I was hoping you weren't going to say.
But, well, the good news is that, I mean, in general, top prospects don't usually end up getting dealt at the deadline anyway. And so, like, Phillies have quite a low-ranked farm system because they're missing that top-end, a lot of that top-end talent. But, like, I was, you know, looking back to compare, like, could they make a trade like the Duran trade with the prospects they have in their system right now? And yeah, I feel like Gage Wood is maybe their top prospect right now and is like a relatively equivalent in value, according to most sources I've read, to someone like Eduardo Tate last year. I'm not a prospect expert, but sort of looking at the grades that have been put on these players, it seems like a similarly valuable chip. So if the Phillies are looking to make one big move, I do think they have one guy that they can use to maybe make something like that happen. The other thing that they have to their advantage is money, if they're willing to spend it. And I touched on this in my article for MLB Trade Rumors, that it's not entirely clear how much money Dombrowski has to work with. Like, they are you're relatively near franchise high payroll numbers. But we do know that given Bo Bichette, a massive deal was on the table last offseason. So ownership is still, in theory, willing to spend if it's on the right players, if Dombrowski can convince them to do it. One guy I name is Sonny Gray, who having a great season, and because he's making so much darn money and has this $10 million buyout at the end of this year as well, very good chance the prospect cost for him would be relatively low if the Phillies are willing to say, yeah, okay, we'll take on like the $20+ million remaining on Sonny Gray's contract this year to get a top of the rotation starter.
So the odds are pretty good the Phillies will be able to do at least one thing that they want to do. We can at least say that.
Yeah,
all
well,
right, great.
Okay. I mean, yeah, the one area where I paused there is the biggest need is right-handed bat, ideally someone who can play the outfield. Problem is just that a lot of teams want that, and very few teams will be offering that. So you could say maybe regardless of the prospects they're willing to give up, the money they're willing to spend, the best target they could possibly acquire just might not be out there.
Is it fair to say, and I feel like you're insinuating this throughout the article, if not outright saying it, that of all of these needs that they have, the right-handed outfield bat, and you actually characterize it more like, oh, they need an outfielder and they need a right-handed bat, it would be great if that was the same person and preferably had, you know, more than one answer, because they are in desperate need of this right-handed outfield bat. So with that being what I feel is the priority of what you're saying of all these needs, how little do you think the Phillies can get away with doing at the deadline? What's the least amount that they can address and still be a team that is improved enough to win a World Series?
That's a good question. I mean, the pitching is still, and I mean, at least in my opinion, the pitching is still good despite its obvious flaws. And it's a kind of pitching staff where if you can just get to the playoffs, it matters a lot. The depth matters a lot less. And so if you're looking to avoid improving in any area, they could probably get by with a couple of pretty minimal depth additions for the pitching just to sort of be able to survive every fifth game and so that the bullpen doesn't completely fall apart. But and then for the offense, it does feel like we've been watching an offense that hard to imagine them sustaining playoff caliber offense with just the players on the roster right now. I mean, you can cross your fingers and hope that Trey Turner hits a lot better in the second half. But I think you have to add an out. I really don't trust like the Derek Hill, Rincones. There needs to be someone needs to come in for the outfield.
Yeah, if the Phillies wound up with like, okay, we got this like two great new arms for the bullpen for late inning leverage relievers, and we got some like a mid range arm, and then a kind of like, you know, quad A rando to sort of address these back end rotation issues, and we're gonna just stick with what we got as far as the offense goes. If they came forward and said that, the answer would be, and we would probably find out later, that they tried some stuff and none of it worked. Like, it's not like they thought, well, fingers crossed is the answer here. It's more so, yeah, we just couldn't get it done, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it's so apparent what they need on offense that if they don't come away with anything, I mean, I feel like you have to trust that they tried some things and the right moves weren't out there. I mean, the player I talked about quite a bit in my article, Taylor Ward, seems like the sort of ideal target for what the Phillies need right now. Corner outfielder, great, good right-handed bat. But you don't want to get into a situation where you're paying way more for Taylor Ward than a Taylor Ward is worth. I'm generally of the belief that you should just make your team better in whatever way you can make your team better rather than trying to fill specific needs, address specific holes. Like, Phillies already have a lot of frontline starting pitching, but if you're paying the same price for Taylor Ward that you would be paying for Sonny Gray, you get Sonny Gray, at least in my opinion.
So, assuming the Phillies' answer for this outfielder isn't Brian De La Cruz, Otto Kemp, Felix Reyes, Tommy Pham, Dylan Moore, Dylan Carlson, or Garrett Stubbs, there are other names that they've been linked to, I guess is the legal term, that have been floated out there. You mentioned Taylor Ward, Joe Adell, Seiya Suzuki. All I feel like you hear is that the Phillies won't be trying to acquire a player of those, of even that count, that you, like, you've heard of in the past, is my understanding. And there are reasons that, say, a team like the Cubs wouldn't be into trading, say, a Suzuki to a wild card rival, something they are also trying to accomplish this year. So how high should expectations be that the Phillies will make a trade for a name that really gets the people going?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see them wind up with a Joe Adell type, but I don't know if that's quite a name that gets the people going.
You're right. That is not. You're fair. That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, like, as... I just don't quite necessarily see any name that gets people excited being realistically acquirable for the Phillies. So maybe get your lower your expectations now. And I don't know. That's maybe all I can say.
I feel like there's 100, if a group of 100 people, and you ask them, should the Phillies make a deal for 35-year-old Mike Trout? There are like three people in that group. There's 97 people who are like, ugh, no. At this point, no. And then there's three people who are like, it would be the joining of the heavens and the earth if Mike Trout came to Philadelphia. And those three people all have jobs as national baseball writers.
he'd make a big difference this season, and I'm always of the, it's not my money. I mean, if they want to take on that contract and the Angels somehow are done, sure, bring Mike Trout here. Why not?
Well, let's talk about what people actually want to hear, which is, I mean, you mentioned Joe Adell. What do you actually think? Let's specifically with using names, players' names. Who do you think is somebody the Phillies will wind up with? At the trade deadline to address these issues? What's the actual, what do you feel is the most likely, having looked into this and written a whole article about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two names that I came away with as the most likely, Lane Thomas is of the Royals, Joe Adell of the Angels, both seem very likely to be traded, will not be come at a high prospect cost. They are right-handed, they play a perfectly capable outfield, and they can add some help against left-handed pitching. I think I would not be surprised if the Phillies walked away from the deadline with one of those two guys. Pitching, it's obviously a lot harder to tell just because there's so many more guys that they could go after, and especially for relief help, wouldn't be surprised, you know, if they're targeting someone who wouldn't necessarily be on our radar because they have a sort of plan for certain pitches that they like. But I feel Lane Thomas and Joe Adell, like, I feel like there's a pretty good chance one of those guys is a Philly in August.
I keep thinking Sonny Gray, not inevitable, but I feel like that's somebody Dombrowski likes because that's somebody, he loves players you've heard of. He loves the old, he'll skew older, like veteran, established guys. And I think the unfortunate aspect of it is that Gray's having a pretty good year and would therefore command a higher price than the Phillies would be able to pay. Gray is just one of those guys who's been in the pool of names like Tommy Pham, who is now in the Phillies organization, multiple times over the past few years as their needs have not really changed a whole lot from year to year at these key junctures. And so you've seen Gray linked to the Phillies or as a potential for the Phillies so many times. And here they are with a, I feel like, greater need at starting pitching than they thought they were going to have. And, you know, you got this 36-year-old who you're even framing as, look, we're not asking him to be the savior of the rotation or anything. He's just got to come in and pitch well enough to fill it out. That's not even really what Gray's doing this year. Gray's pitching, like, pretty well for the Red Sox. He's, I'm not going to point out that he's leading the league in win-loss percentage, because that's a statistic so lost to time, I'm not sure people recognize it at all. But, you know, he's showing with a 2.61 ERA through 16 games, he's showing that he's got something in the tank at 36 years old. And he's doing it for a team that's got no prayer of making the playoffs, I don't think. So, you know, that's a name that keeps coming up in my head as far as pitching help. But it does, I don't know, it also just feels like kind of an overshoot.
I think it really comes down to how much money they're willing to take on for this one, because there are a lot of good starters available right now, which could sort of drive down the cost of them all. Like, you've got maybe Scooble gets traded. Seems like maybe Joe Ryan is going to get traded. A lot of Casey Mize, another guy having a great season. And so if someone like Sonny Gray, if there's a lot of teams that are pivoting towards the other options because they have more prospects to offer, but they aren't interested in taking on money, like, Sonny Gray's making $31 million this year, even prorated to the final 2 months. That's $10 million salary plus a $10 million buyout on his contract. So if the Phillies are willing to pay all of the $20 million remaining on Sonny Gray's contract, maybe they're the only team that's willing to do that. And if they are, I could see it coming together.
It does kind of make them feel like suckers, though, if they're the only team willing to do that. Like, wait, what do we not know that everyone else seems to know? I love the trade deadline. Well, my last question for you comes from the comments section of your very article. This really... I
try to avoid reading those. So.
Yeah, you're going to love it. Don't worry, it's not about you. Someone very confident in the comments section of your piece suggested that, quote, if the Phils were smart, they'd trade Kyle Schwarber before the trade deadline and pick up the pieces they need to be able to compete against the MLB's better teams. Now, I heard what I just said out loud, same as you, and it's ridiculous. The MLB... You've completely disqualified yourself from the conversation, but we'll continue. For example, in a game in which he hit a solo homer and drove in two runs, and in which the Phils won 7-3, Schwarber's home run and RBI didn't affect the outcome of the game. The Phils would have won without his homer and RBI. Real hitters, like Luis Arraez, pitchers who would improve the Phils' rotation and bullpen, and young future stars who are being blocked on their current teams by established players will be available in the next few weeks, and the Phils would be remiss by not taking advantage of Schwarber's first-half success and trading him for badly needed position players and pitchers while his trade value is at an all-time high. Leo, are the Phillies smart enough to trade Kyle Schwarber for Luis Arraez and whatever other players they want from the Padres?
Oh, man, that is some good analysis. You know, they really...
Here's the thing. I'm sorry, not to cut you off, but I got to say this.
Yeah, no, please
and
do.
Going into the regular season from the offseason where, you know, their question was for a little bit, is Kyle Schwarber even coming back to the Phillies? And then we did the same dance with a couple other guys. And ultimately, the team decided these guys are too, you know, despite the age, you know, everybody's in their 30s and the contracts being handed out and the length of contracts and declines and all that, Kyle Schwarber is still too valuable to let go. We're bringing him back. There was a time where I was like, I'm curious what would happen if they don't. I was the same way about not bringing Real Muto back, which if they had gotten Bichette, they said they wouldn't have brought Real Muto back. It would have forced them to address the future of that position in the organization, which I still feel like they have not done. And with Schwarber, I would have been curious to see, okay, yeah, that's a lot of money tied up in one guy. He provides massive value, but you break him into a couple other, you know, areas where you do need more guys, and maybe you wind up with part of your next generation of impactful players. I'm not saying that argument has no merit, but this was stated so matter-of-factly. And it also, framing it like, oh, his first half success, as though Kyle Schwarber hasn't had massive success outside of the first half of 2026, is also kind of comical. And ultimately, Leo, if they traded Kyle Schwarber, which they're not going to do, if they traded Kyle Schwarber right now, I think the city might deflate like a balloon. Like, I don't think you can get away with that. Like, if you have playoff hopes this year, I mean, I feel like it's fair to say this comment was also downplaying Schwarber's impact. Like, you know, oh, they don't even need his offense. They can win games without Kyle Schwarber's offense. Leo, you've been watching the Phillies all year. Would you say this offense would benefit from not having Kyle Schwarber in it? Or produces at such a high level that removing Kyle Schwarber from it would be totally fine? I don't think I agree with that.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that Kyle Schwarber is very important, not only to the offense, but the fan base. Like, I mean, I will say I have been thinking about, look, like, Ranger Suarez signed for 5 years and $130 million. Kyle Schwarber signed for 5 years, $150 million. Knowing now how Andrew Painter's rookie season has gone, it's a question I've been wondering. Would you go back to the offseason? Would you sign Ranger Suarez instead of Kyle Schwarber? I think that's a real question. But... And maybe the answer is still Schwarber, but I think it's something you could work. Yeah, again, it's, as you brought up, like, there is a conversation to be had about, is there a possible way they could have spent that money on a different player? But no, at this point, trading Kyle Schwarber would be the second worst thing that the Phillies could do right now outside of trading Christopher Sanchez.
Just a thought. I feel like there's always somebody in the crowd who stands up and says, I know you all love this player, but you gotta put aside your feelings to improve the team, and like, we should get rid of them and just throw them onto the street. And I think that's kind of what this person was doing. But I also felt like it was worth addressing, because sometimes you gotta look under those rocks that you don't want to look under just to see what's under there. Well, Leo, thanks for dropping by. That'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. My thanks to my co-host, Liz Rocher, and my guest, Leo Morgenstern of MLBTradeRumors.com. You can get new episodes of Hittin' Season 3 times a week anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find bonus Phillies podcasts at the Hittin' Season Patreon at patreon.com/hittin'season. We have a great new episode of The Dirty Inning, the Phillies podcast about the dumbest, funniest, and most obscure innings in Phillies history, about the 1996 All-Star Game and the Phillies lead up to the 1996 All-Star Game, the last time the All-Star Game was in Philadelphia until this year. I'm Justin Kalou, and from WHYY, that's the ball game. We'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.